641. Good morning. It's Tech Tuesday. And we've been talking recently about that huge hack connected with Capital One. So what should you do if you're a victim? We're joined now by Bill Sickens, host of User Friendly 2.0, heard Saturdays from 5 to 6 on AM 860 The Answer. And Bill has a lot of answers. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning to you.
So first, what should people do about the Capital One issue?
Well, Capital One has actually put out a list, and this is something that's good to consider for any of these services that are breached, and we seem to have so many of them going on. And some of these are actually common sense steps, but it is things that you want to think about. And the first one that they talked about is to watch for alerts from the credit card company. The only footnote that I would give on that one is that once they've stolen your information, there's a lot of possibility of things like phishing emails. So I think getting alerts is one thing, but checking in with the company where you initiate the conversation and contact them is probably a better way or a more secure way of handling that. Signing up for a credit monitoring service, in most cases, these companies do that for free for a while, and that is something that actually can be very beneficial to give you some information if there's an account opened in your name that you don't know about, those type of things. And then one of the other things that is a service that they provide is the ability to sign up for alerts on your accounts. As the credit cards goes over the limit, those different type of things, those services are pretty much offered just as a part of anything that you would have. And if you turn those on, then you can get some more information via that to be able to know if something's going on with your account. Check your credit card statements. This goes with a given. Same thing for bank statements and all of that type of thing, depending on where the hack is. Watch for information that shouldn't be there. If someone's spending your money, you want to know about it. And then finally, the advice they give you is to freeze your credit. And this is a little more involved because it does require going to all three bureaus, shutting down your credit information, and then you would have to go on and re-enable it the next time you wanted to get a loan. But it is ultimately a very strong way to be able to prevent others from being able to open accounts in your name and that type of a thing.
Yeah, and some credit card companies are allowing you to freeze just the card, and that's actually fairly simple.
Yeah, that's fairly simple, too. That's a request you can just make with the credit card company. And, you know, for all of these things that you do, you've got the side that it no longer can be used. But, of course, you've got to realize that it can no longer be used while it's frozen. So you do something like that, you're not going to be able to have the same services you would normally. But it's a balancing act, and really, especially with the Capital One situation, it's probably a good idea. And the other side of this is to keep in mind that the bad guys keep this information for a while, so you may not necessarily see anything right now.
Good point. Another story that you're covering today has to do with software and whether people should buy or actually rent their software.
Yes, this is something that's becoming more and more of a kind of a new norm. So it used to be when you went and got software for your computer, you went to the store, and once upon a time in the ancient computer world, so, you know, a week ago, you would go out and buy a package that contained a disk usually of some kind and install it, and there's your software. And more companies are switching over now to this idea of subscription-based software where you pay a monthly fee. Generally speaking, it's a lot less than what you would pay for it all at once, but you have an ongoing payment for the life of the software. Some good things and some bad things to go with that. The good thing is that you get the updates and that type of thing without having to repurchase it usually, but of course you have a monthly payment. Now, the other end of this is that we're seeing a lot of companies, because they prefer the software-based service, pushing more and more for us to do that. In fact, Microsoft has just announced that one of the ways that they distribute the Office platform, Office 365, which is your Office and Excel and that type of thing, is going to eventually become only a subscription service where you can't buy it one-off. So I don't know if that's a good way to go either, but it is definitely the direction we're seeing these things move.
Well, the Department of Justice is actually trying to move into the 21st century and benefit from the cloud. Let's talk about a new program called, what, Project Jedi?
Project Jedi, yes. That's, of course, we're going to have to find a Star Wars name for that.
Yeah.
Because it's the Department. What they're looking to do is put together a system that uses cloud-based computing to be able to benefit all the different things they do. So things like HUD displays and helmets, the interconnection between the different soldiers as well as the departments and all the different things that go along with that are still use, in some cases, very, very old technology. And what they're doing with this is they want to go to a cloud provider like an Amazon Web Services or Microsoft Azure, one of those. to be able to interconnect and tie all these things together and get the same kind of benefits we do from things like our smart speakers and that type of stuff. The project's been on hold for a little bit now because of some irregularities with the bidding process that they're working through, but it does look like something that will come back, and as soon as they're able to get those difficulties figured out, it is going to be something that's going to be very interesting to see some of the technologies that we already take for granted being applied in this fashion.
And real quickly, before we let you go, I guess another Tesla crashed when on autopilot.
Yes, this is something that is being considered. Is the idea of autopilot safe? Now, very strictly speaking, we don't have auto drive yet. At least that's what the official statement is from companies like Tesla. It's an autonomous driving system. You're required to put your hands on the wheel in intervals of usually every 30 seconds or something like that to prove that you're still there. But of course, even with that, people are taking their eyes off the road and doing other things while the car is driving itself. The one thing I did a little research on this is every time we have a crash using a form of an autonomous or auto driving system, it's news because it's a big thing that comes out. However, it does seem like per capita there are more crashes with human drivers than there are with auto drive. So I don't know if I'd go as far as to say that this is necessarily safer, but it is definitely something that has been out there for a while now, and most of the time it's okay. Now, I don't think I'm ready for an auto drive car. Having a kind of a souped up version of the cruise control is one thing, but definitely keep your eyes on the wheel. Make sure that you're still driving your car. And if you're able to use a system like this, that doesn't mean you can climb in the back seat and read a book.
Good point. Thanks for your help today, Bill.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
You too. Bill Sickens, host of User Friendly 2.0, heard Saturdays from 5 to 6 p.m. on AM 860 The Answer.